Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Money starts right now, live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Steve Grasso, Brian Kelly, David Seberg, and Guy Adami. Tonight on Fast, Bitcoin is getting slammed after Japanese regulators call for an upgrade of a major exchange. Are we seeing the death of Bitcoin as we know it? BK will break it down. Plus, the Chartmaster says there's one beaten down Dow stock that's heading for a big comeback. He'll tell us the name and how high he sees it going. But first, we start off with the energy sector. To the rescue, helping the Dow avoid its longest losing streak in 40 years. One could say it was the type of dramatic save one only sees on an episode of Baywatch. Check out some of these moves in the past 3 months. Exxon up 11%, ConocoPhillips up 20%, Marathon Oil up 36%, and finally, Chesapeake Energy up 63%. So what better time to play a rousing game of trade it or fade it?
Oh.
Energy style. We all know the rules of the game, right? Trade it or fade it.
Can you just go over them quickly? It's Friday. It's been...
Guy, Chesapeake.
Well, Melissa, high on this Friday. You're going to say the stock's up 63%. How can you possibly trade this stock still? That's a great question. I will say you trade CHK, and one of the reasons why is valuation still isn't ridiculous, although that's not in and of itself a reason to buy the stock, but there is still a significant short interest of 22%, and I don't think they've come close to covering yet. I think the OPEC news is bullish, as you saw today with the stock up 3.5%, and I think there's still room. People will chase, and I think they'll chase this closer to $6.50 than they will sell it below $5. So I say, despite the move, trade CHK.
Which means buy it.
That's,
yes.
No, no,
see, I'm just clarifying.
I did it correctly from the start. And then you
You're
got
not the only one involved here. There's a viewer at home.
So why didn't you give me the rules at the beginning like I asked for? You wouldn't know how to do that at the top.
What would you do with Chesapeake?
You know, I think for a short-term trade, I'd be a buyer of Chesapeake. For short-term, again, I agree with Guy. I think the short interest is the qualifier there for me. This move will last a little bit longer in energy, not for a very long time, but I do believe the shorts are going to continue to push this thing higher. I'd be a buyer.
It's overbought, actually, on an RSI relative strength index,
so
which
you would
it's been, I would fade,
fade it.
I would fade. I would fade Chesapeake. Yeah. It's overbought. Last time it was overbought, it came in pretty dramatically for a $4 number or $5 number. Mm. So you have to be very careful. It had a big day today on a relative basis. I would stay away. I would fade it.
See, now, I don't know. I would say I would trade his fade, but I'm trying to say is I would
That's
buy.
That's confusing.
Right, exactly. The whole thing's confusing because trading is both buying and selling, believe it or not. You know, when you have a trade, there's a buyer and a seller. Point is, I would buy Chesapeake.
You would buy? Okay.
All right. Buy with a B.
And so maybe the game should be buy it or sell deny it. Buy it or deny it.
The graphics are made for trade it or fade it, so that's what we're going
to
stick with
today. My pushback to Steve quickly would be, and Steve knows this, and I'm not suggesting he's wrong, but RSIs, you know, if the stock flatlines for the next couple of weeks, RSIs come back to normal levels, and then the stock could go from there. So
yes, and to counter your counter.
Counter the counter.
All stocks react differently with a relative strength index or RSI. This one, Chesapeake in question, actually responds pretty dramatic to an overbought and an oversold. Thank you.
You know what that is quickly? Can we? That's a trade school. Can we throw that graphic up?
That's
Steve. It's trade school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Nice
a lot
job,
of things happening on this Friday. Grasso gets his own pick here. Marathon Oil, Grasso, trade it or fade it?
Well, I'm going to be consistent here. I'm going to go with fade it because it's still in the energy complex. The reason why energy moved today was OPEC. That was the overarching macro news of the day. Everyone was expecting 1 million new barrels per day to enter production. We got something like 600,000. The big difference was that was bullish or seen as bullish for the entire market. I think it's a sell. I think energy is a sell.
Fades once again. What do
well,
you do?
I trade. I trade it because you got a great setup here. $22 looks like it could break out. You don't need to buy it ahead of that. You can wait for that breakout. See if oil continues its run here. So I'm a trader of this or a buyer of it.
Well, I would say I'm a buyer as well. Again, for the short term, I think all, you know, rising tide is going to lift all boats in this sector. I don't care whether it's the garbage energy stock or the
it
most high quality.
It was up 7% today, though. Don't you think you should let it breathe?
You know, you can let it breathe, but I do think there's, I wouldn't let it breathe right now. I think there's more upside in the near term in this sector.
I'm with Steve on fade it. See, I'm playing the game correctly, not right. buy it. I said, if you want to change the game, buy it or deny it. Apparently, we can't do that.
I like buy it or deny it.
But by my metrics, so this stock valuation is expensive, and it doesn't have near, it has like a 2% short interest. So not a lot of shorts in here. They're going to give you the next impetus to get it to that 25 level. So I'm with Steve on this
Plus,
one.
Plus, before we get all excited, if you look at energy as a whole, Guy and I like to play this game with the XLE. Five-year performance is basically dead money. So granted, you have these moves that are month to month,
right,
but on the whole, energy has really done nothing
those
for 5 years.
Because those are integrated.
Right. Yes.
Right. Which brings us.
A lot of integrated names.
Which brings us to our next one.
Ah, nice job. Yeah.
ConocoPhillips.
COP.
Oh, Brian Kelly.
That's an integrated. It's good to know. Now, so I'm a buyer of this one. I'm a buyer. I'm not going to be a denier. And the reason why,
no, no,
again.
It's a denier. Stop
yes, it is.
Denier.
There's a buyer or denier.
Right,
so
BK's
a buyer. I'm trading it, and the reason why, again, it comes down to, I think all of these names have this great risk-reward setup right now. $65 on ConocoPhillips. I know where my stop is. That's it right there. And then I can shoot for the upside as long as oil keeps going higher.
Can I inject a question
into
this?
You run the show. I mean,
where, I know. I can do whatever I want. What levels do we need to see oil hold on to in order for these trade it or fade it scenarios to work?
Well, it's interesting. Crude's actually come off over the last couple weeks, and these stocks have done relatively well. So if crude, again, were to sort of go sideways, even if it was just slightly lower, I think you'd still see performance in the energy sector.
Yeah, I mean, I think it also goes back to the demand picture right now, because I think that's the biggest risk in the entire market. So I would suggest that the worst-case scenario would be for it to go to $75, right, which would scare the heck out of people from the standpoint of the expense for gasoline and et cetera. So I think we're in a pretty good zone right now. I think you can have crude continue to grind a little bit higher, and I think you're a winner.
But you just asked
on his call, I'm a buyer of that. I agree with you, BK, because you want to own Brent levered names, right? Anything levered there, because the spread between WTI and Brent is probably going to continue to widen. I'd own this name.
So you just brought up the best question of the night so far is where crude goes.
Thank
because
you.
If you
well
look at...
I've already invited you over
if you
to
look
the
at,
desk.
Oh, that's
here,
right. So. I'm still here. I'm here. If you look at everything is reliant, it depends on to what degree, on the crude move. The crude move is at the upper end of the bounce or the sell zone right now. It should be a sell right here at 69.30, which is right where we are.
Mm. All right. Last pick here, ExxonMobil, David Seaberg, trade it or fade it?
I'm a fader. I'm a seller, fader, whatever you want to say. I mean, look, there's no growth in this company until 2020, zero growth. So you look at it and say the stock probably just meanders. It probably will if you say rising tide lifts all boats. Grind higher if oil continues to grind higher, but it's going to underperform every other name that's a higher quality name. I'd prefer to own a CVX over an ExxonMobil at these levels.
It was energy today that saved the Dow from its nine-session losing streak. So what do you make of that in terms of being able to snap that losing streak, but with the leadership of a very small part of the S&P 500?
Well, I'm sure we'll discuss this, if not on this show, on the great options action at 5:30 with Dan and Mike and Carter Worth. With that said, the underperformance of technology would have been our lead in a lot of shows, but for this energy. So it does concern me a wee bit. Yes, you had the breaking of the eight-day losing streak. The S&P was up, you know, marginally. That gives me some pause. And can I play real quickly?
Sure.
What did you do on ExxonMobil?
I faded.
Yeah, I'm a denier as well. I deny it.
Deny it.
Wait, what does that mean?
Buy it or deny it.
Buy it or deny it.
So you're also fading.
No, I just said I'm denying it.
The energy complex does not have the punching power of the technology group. It can never lead this market for longer than a day or two, or maybe even stabilize it for a day or two. I think for the most part, if energy was for sale in some large way, there's no way that, if technology was for sale in some large way, there's no way that energy saves the day. So this is putting all your eggs in the wrong basket if you think energy is going to keep this rally going.
All right, coming up, the crypto universe is crumbling as Bitcoin sinks to its lowest levels of the year. Are we witnessing Bitcoin Armageddon? We've got the details. Plus, it's been a tough week for Tesla. One top analyst says something about the electric vehicle company just doesn't add up. And later, the Chartmaster is pressing the buy button on one beaten down Dow stock. And when you find out why, you might be pressing the buy button too. We're live from the Nasdaq market site in New York City's Times Square. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Bitcoin taking a beating, breaking below 6,000, down about 11% today as the hodler's nightmare continues. Check out this chart. Bitcoin down 65% since its all-time high hit on December 17th, and that is only half the story. Our Bob Pisani is at the NYSE to break the rest down. Bob.
Hi, Melissa. Cryptocurrencies are facing a crisis of confidence right now. This week, it's mostly around the security of exchanges. Bitcoin prices fell over 6% today after Japan's financial regulator ordered several crypto exchanges to step up their game to prevent money laundering, terrorist financing, and unauthorized access. Who could blame them? Break-ins at two South Korean exchanges have been a real blow to security and confidence. On Wednesday, South Korean crypto exchange Bithumb said it was temporarily suspending deposit and withdrawal services after about 30 million worth of cryptos were stolen. That follows another break-in last week when CoinRail, another South Korean exchange, had been hacked, losing over 40 million in all coins. Japan's largest Bitcoin exchange, Bitflyer, then said it would suspend the creation of new accounts and improve measures to stop money laundering. So speaking of confidence, earlier in this week, there was a withering assessment from the Bank for International Settlements. Now, these are the central banks for other central banks around the world. On Sunday, they released a report saying cryptos were unstable, they consumed too much electricity, and that they were subject to too much manipulation and fraud to ever work as a medium of exchange. Finally, this technical pattern, oh, it could not look worse. Not only is there a straight line downtrend in place, we're about to break below the lows for the year. That was set on February 6th. Remember that, when Bitcoin briefly broke below 6,000 before bouncing back? And then it doubled to 12,000 in the following 4 weeks? That's a good reminder of just how volatile crypto can be. Back to you, Melissa.
All right, Bob. Thank you, Bob Pisani. Well, all this terrible price action in crypto has given us pause and forced us to ask a tough question. Should we continue to cover Bitcoin? And the answer is sadly no. So today we are having a funeral for Bitcoin. It was fun while it lasted. So many memories, so many friends. There was Tom Lee and his calls for 20,000 by year end. There was Novogratz and his calls for 40,000. And there was Ripple. I think we'll miss you most of all, Brad Garlinghouse. And then there were the characters, Bitcoin Jesus, the Oracle of Bitcoin, all 500 of the Ethereum co-founders, and who could forget the Coinbase screen grab and mindless trolling on Twitter, and of course our Bitcoin bug. Bitcoin, we hardly knew you, but you will occupy.
Hold on. I mean, listen, I've got a couple things I want to say here. This is not the funeral for Bitcoin whatsoever. So follow me over here to this to the thing. I'm going to tell you what's going on here. Couple different things. Let's look at the Bitcoin bug that we just retired, and all of a sudden we're declaring that that the Bitcoin funeral is here. You know when that Bitcoin bug came on? That was just around the highs. So when we start to declare a funeral and things get really horrible, sentiment is approaching the lows. So hopefully we'll use that funeral bug to say, hey, you know what? That was near the lows. Number two. Bob talked about the Japan exchanges ordered to improve business conditions. It's actually a good thing. Short run, it's going to be a little tough because they're stopping new accounts from coming in, but actually they're cleaning up the system. They're making sure it's more robust, making sure it's better for people. And then finally, there was news today that Mt. Gox is going into rehabilitation, and they're going to distribute the rest of the $1 billion worth of Bitcoin. But here's what's great about that. They're not going to distribute it until at least Q1 of 2019. Everybody thinks all of a sudden there's going to be a wave of selling. Not happening now. So let's go to the chart and see where we are. Now, when I walked over here, look at this. Okay, we've had this big downtrend, 65, 70% peak to down here. That is not unusual for Bitcoin. It's very painful. But look at this, where we are right here. Okay, guess where we were? That was only back in November. Okay, you know where we were a year ago? $2,500. So, you know, let's put this in perspective. It doesn't mean that Bitcoin can't go lower. This is a bear market, and in bear markets, we don't know where they end. There's usually some kind of big crescendo to that. But this is by no means the funeral for Bitcoin.
So, BK, when you look at that middle circle, the middle level that you just plugged in there, that's roughly December, early on December, that's when Bitcoin futures, correct me if I'm wrong, started trading, and then about 17 days later, we see the peak in Bitcoin, and we haven't seen that be resurrected, or we haven't seen that lower trend line be broken. Is it because people can now bet against Bitcoin that you have a real arena for the bears to lie in?
No, I don't think so. There's not enough trading in the Bitcoin futures to really, it's increasing, but to really put that kind of pressure on them, they're cash settled. There's a little bit difference there. I mean, we had a confluence of a couple different things. Remember, we had tax selling. Remember that we had a couple of these hacks. And then also remember that we've had $10 billion of new money go into ICOs. To me, the ICO market looks like that right now. Looks like December, where we put up the Bitcoin bug. Down here is where I want to be, starting to get long these cryptocurrencies and less into the ICOs.
Question for you, BK. Do you think we should bring back the Bitcoin bug?
Yeah, you know what? I do think we should bring it back. I like to be a contrarian, so yeah, let's do it.
There it is.
There he is.
There it is. What?
You know, it was great. You did the hand thing, but you went the wrong way.
I know, because you
gotta,
you know,
you got to look this way, yeah. And you got to look. That was fantastic.
Because I'm looking at the reverse in the TV. Anyway. Yeah.
It's hard to make your brain work that way.
Mine
just doesn't work.
Coming up, former CEO of Starbucks, Howard Schultz, says the struggling stock will take investors to the promised land, and that has one trader going all in. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, First in Business Worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
His prices are insane.
That's what Howard Schultz wrote about the price of Starbucks stock. And we've got a way to buy it for even less. Plus.
So, Michael, what do you think about the new design?
Brian, I love it. You know, Blazer and I go back a long way.
Well, Mike, wait till you see the new Chevy Blazer, because it's already got some of the traders kicking the tires on GM stock. And that's when Fast Money returns.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Time for a buzzkill. Check out Tesla stock sinking 4% today after Bernstein analyst Tony Sakanagi questioned the way the electric vehicle maker accounts for car costs, implied it could be attempting to hide losses from Wall Street. Bernstein currently has a $265 price target on Tesla, which is about 20% lower from here. This caps off a tumultuous week for Tesla, the electric car automaker, suing a former employee for hacking, sharing data from the company. CEO Elon Musk accused the employee of sabotage. After a big run in the past month, the stock is down 7% this week. So is this the time to pump the brakes on Tesla? Grasso.
No, I'm still long. Where I bought it? I bought it. The last purchase was right around that 280, 281 mark. I'm still long. It had a massive spike higher. It's settling in now. If you look at this stock, it only matters what Model 3 production is going to be. All of this, all of the analysts that march out every time the stock spikes higher, they're going to sound like white noise. If they meet production levels of 5,000, which they probably will, the stock is over $400 bid.
I'd say this. I think the one thing you have to look at in this scenario is who's the incremental buyer, right? And if there's an issue or potential issue like Tony identified today, With the way they're sort of allocating cost of goods sold, and there's a real true gross margin issue, that is a red flag. That's a really bad black eye for them. So I'd say this. The institutional community right now, the core holders, they're happy holders, maybe the mutual funds, the long onlys. Hedge fund community is circling the wagons. They are asking for any information they can to potentially get short the stock at the right time and really press on that.
So those wagons have burned before.
I understand
30%
that, but
short
here's the difference. People, core investors think that Elon Musk is crazy. I mean, the way he's coming out with his text, all that stuff. So I would suggest
but the street has looked through the possibility of missing numbers. The street has looked through all sorts of things, the possibility of capital raise, and all of a sudden they're going to be hung up on gross margins.
I think Tony is amazing in the way he identifies
what
things. And gross margins, they've already said.
With Tesla on any level, it's about, they've cared about production sometimes, they've cared about growth, but right now, you tell me,
so here's what I'd say,
if they meet 5,000 per week,
you're right.
You
that's,
think that
that's,
the stock
that's the
is
you're right,
weird.
That's the magic. But I would say I always look at sentiment, and I know for a fact institutions right now, hedge funds are being very, very critical here.
All right, let's stick with the autos. General Motors is bringing back its iconic Chevy Blazer. Let's get to Phil LeBeau in Chicago for all the details. Hi, Phil.
Melissa, it's been about 14 years since we last saw the Chevy Blazer being sold by General Motors. Well, get ready for the new one because the company unveiled it last night in Atlanta. And if it looks far different than the Blazer you remember, that's because it is. The old one was a true SUV built on a truck platform. This one is a crossover utility vehicle. It's a 2019 model that goes on sale next year. and it will be built in Mexico, which does not sit well with the UAW. It issued a statement saying GM employs over 15,000 production workers in Mexico, pays the workers less than $3 per hour, and exports over 80% of the vehicles to the U.S. to sell here. This is all happening while UAW GM workers here in the U.S. are laid off and unemployed. Why is General Motors bringing back the Blazer? Because it's a hot market right now for crossovers. Look at the sales year to date, or I should say in the first quarter for General Motors. These guys aren't the only ones who realize this is what people want. High profit margin vehicles like a crossover are in demand, and so they're going to add to that with the Chevy Blazer again in showrooms next year. As you take a look at shares of General Motors, we talked about the Mexico production. Exports from Mexico are up 39% this year. General Motors exports, Melissa. And this news, maybe the optics aren't the best. They announced this vehicle and announced that it's being built in Mexico one day before they lay off 1,500 workers at the Lordstown plant in Ohio.
All right, Phil, thank you. Phil Lebeau in Chicago. What do we do with General Motors? Or
buy it or deny it? Are we doing that?
Yeah, buy it or deny it.
No, no, that is not a thing. Oh. That does not exist. But in terms of autos.
I would deny it then.
No.
Well, if you look at where GM traded up to, it failed. Thank you. What I did there. So GM last fall, traded up to 45, failed, had a big move to the downside. Traded up to 45 earlier this year, seeming to be failing now. Valuation is a compelling argument. I get it. But it's had a tremendous run. Maybe these autos are dead money. I would rather deny it than buy it at these levels.
Yeah, I'm with Guy, and I would deny this one, too.
No, not you, too.
I would, yes, because I completely agree. And look at the price action of this thing has been awful over the last couple of days. You just want to stay away from it now.
I would buy it, not deny it.
Especially
with the crossovers. Phil showed that little graphic there with crossovers up 23% and pickup trucks only up 2%.
Okay.
Ford is your name for pickup trucks, GM crossover.
Stop talking. You bought you
deny
whatever.
It.
That's wrong game. Chevy Blazer, by the way, was the it car in the 80s. In fact, it was my first car. I got a used 87 Chevy Blazer.
So nice.
To celebrate the return of the Blazer, we thought we'd do a little flashback Friday, take it back to the decade of decadence to show you what the traders look like then. Oh. So we start off with Guy. Yeah. Take a look at what Guy looked like. Oh, wow.
Which one are you?
Which one is he?
I'm the one with the stripe.
The one in the middle?
Right, obviously. Look at that
look
stare.
At that look. That's nasty,
then there's
man.
Grosso. Where's Grosso's picture?
Deny it. There he is.
Wow. There you go. You look
identical.
That was the 80s?
Brian Kelly. Take a look at Brian Kelly here.
Oh,
that's
nice.
So adorable.
Look at that. That's the Don Johnson look right
and,
there.
And David Seberg. David Seberg's picture in the 80s.
There it is. What are you exactly
saying? Exactly. Oh, just kidding. Wow. There's the actual picture. And you do actually look.
It looks,
exactly
looks like Meryl Streep there.
Jesus. The final trade, Grosso.
Make fun of you.
GE. Yeah, you
first
do.
Up day in 8 days. GE, someone forgot to tell it. It got taken out of the Dow. Bye.
Speakers.
You know, I said gold was a decent buy. I think silver, too. SLV, great risk reward.
Seberg.
XOP. Just for a trade, I like the XOP for a short run to $45.
Gee.
CHK comes out, Mal, back to you.
All right, that's it for us here on Fast. See you back here Monday at 5. Don't move. Options action starts right after the break.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.